are now going to listen to KAZ iBook Review with Hopeton Hick.
In Alex Segura's latest Pete Fernandez mystery, Miami Midnight, the Miami private investigator has retired from sleuthing after a close encounter with death. He's in therapy, going to Alcohol Anonymous meetings, and his love life is in a shambles. In steps Cuban mobster Don Alvaro Mujica, who persuades him to take a PI job to search for a valuable Cuban painting that his murderer's son's wife disappeared with after his death. With Miami Midnight, Segura paints a mural of an introspective hero who may be heading toward tragedy or redemption. Alex Segura, a former journalist, has written 5 Pete Fernandez mysteries. Alex Segura, welcome back to KAZI Book Review.
Thanks so much for having me. This is awesome.
Alex, finding out that this is the last of the Pete Fernandez novels, the private detective from Miami, living in New Jersey, back in Miami, I really looked at this novel, especially as I was reading through the first part of it, not knowing whether this was going to be a tragedy or a redemption arc. And I thought that was really cool the way, as a reader, you don't know, is this going to end up as a tragedy or a redemption arc?
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad it kept people in suspense. I mean, I didn't really know myself until I started putting pen to paper on that last book. I knew I wanted to tell that arc of the story of how he becomes a private eye from being like this washed up alcoholic, but it was hard, and the ending came naturally, so I was happy about that. But without spoiling too much, I mean, it does go one of those ways, and it definitely brings closure to Pete's story, whether it's what people want exactly. That's kind of not what I shoot for. I try to just give them what I think the story demands. So,
bringing his, and I guess this isn't a reveal, his mother's story into this story, and going back in time, there's a lot of look backs, a lot of times in the book where we go back in time. Talk about your decision to have basically 2 timelines in this novel. Was that there from the very beginning as you looked at us writing this as the last Pete Fernandez novel? Did you make a decision that I want to not only talk about more history on his mother, but also bring the reader back in time?
You know, it's really funny because you mentioned, before we started recording, you talked about Attica Locke, and I was at the Virginia Festival of the Book where Attica was speaking, and I was, at that point last year, I knew I wanted to write about, a tragic jazz musician, I wanted to write about Miami crime, but I also wasn't sure what the big hook was, and I needed a big hook to make it work as the final Pete Fernandez story. And Attica was talking about Bluebird, and how one of the characters' moms, well, the main protagonist, his mom is an alcoholic, and that just kind of clicked for me. And I was like, wow, why didn't I think of that? Why haven't I ever told the story of Pete's mom? And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized that I had, and I'd meant to, but I just kind of kept it in my back pocket until I was ready. Because most of the books are about Pete and his dad and his family, but we never hear about his mom aside from saying, she died in childbirth. And so that all came together, and that's really what made it click for me in terms of, that's what really elevated it to being the last Pete story and the last novel. And so I kind of thanked her in the acknowledgments of the book, and we've chatted about it since, but that working the multiple timelines has been part of the Pete books for a while now. I mean, going back to the second book, you're hearkening back to a serial killer from a previous generation. So it's something we've done before. But never to this personal level, where we're basically finding out about Pete's mom and this untold story about her. So it was challenging, but I felt like it was the story that had to be there if we were going to close out the series.
Talk a little bit about having a character arc with his mother, Graciela, mm-hmm. that just occurs all in the past and all in one book, but we get a full character arc.
Well, I'm happy that you said that because I think the challenge, especially in crime fiction, when you have, all these brutal murders and violent situations, is that you can get desensitized to what's actually happening and the fact that it's happening to people, especially with women. I really wanted to challenge myself to paint a full picture of who this woman was and what her life was like, as opposed to just, you get the opening scene where it's cops coming onto the crime scene, and it's a little distant and it's just a little clinical. So I wanted to really personalize it, not just for Pete, but for the reader, So by the time you get to the end of the book, you feel like you really knew her, and that adds a lot of grief to the whole thing because you know that she's gone from page one.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. My guest is Alex Segura. We're talking about his last Pete Fernandez novel, Miami Midnight. Now, I was reading somewhere, they talked about how your character, Pete Fernandez, is really different than any other character out there, or most characters out there who are the protagonists in crime fiction novels with the series. And one of the things I think that really distinguishes Pete is he is incredibly introspective and incredibly vulnerable. So talk about that decision to make this character so introspective, so vulnerable, especially as a recovering alcoholic and with all the tragedy he's had in his life.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. I think part of the challenge is, and for me as a reader, I just didn't really enjoy the kind of invincible alpha male white knight stories. I liked my characters to be flawed and dealing with trauma and kind of reeling from some kind of tragedy. And that rings true to me. It feels more genuine.
Can I jump in real quick? Let me jump in real quick, because what I want to let the audience know is not simply that a lot of the characters have tragedy. He reflects on it. I think that's what one of the things that makes it so unique is that he is really thinking deep and reflecting on his flaws.
Yeah, that's true. And I think part of that is, like you said, he's in recovery. So part of the recovery process is, you know, going back and digging through your mistakes. And if not making amends for them, then at least like dealing with them in a personal way and kind of engaging with them. And that requires some level of reflection and introspection. And it's an interesting part for Pete because it allows you as a reader to kind of engage with his past in a much more intimate way. And that was of interest to me instead of just having him be this invincible hero or this, you know, this kind of person you only see through his actions and his words. I think we spend a lot of time in Pete's head, and I don't feel like it slows down the narrative too much.
No, actually, I find it absolutely fascinating because it gives you a sense of more of a sense of the motivation of the character to really understand where he's coming from as opposed to not spending as much time in his head. So he is asked to invest. He's asked by Don Alvaro Mujica. He's hired to find a painting that his son had owned by Armando Menico, and his son was a aspiring jazz artist. And one of the things that I like about this novel is you sort of paint this world of jazz and art in Miami and beyond. And you really get this sense of the way that music and the way that these paintings sort of inform the heritage of Miami, especially the painting that he's trying to find, which is a painting of a famous general who fought for Cuba's freedom from being a colony of Spain back in 1896. So you really get sort of this history,
right.
So talk a little bit about that decision plot-wise to make that character who was murdered a jazz artist and to have so much about art in this book.
Yeah, I mean, I knew I wanted to write about a tragic musical figure. I just wasn't sure what it was. And at the time, and still now, I've been listening to a lot of jazz and just kind of immersing myself in that music and that world. And there's so many tragic figures in jazz, you know, drug addiction, crime, just tragic accidents. Just like, you know, I guess it's true for rock music as well. But it was something that really struck me, and it felt like a unique way to engage with music in the final book as opposed to having it be this mysterious rock star. I feel like jazz and noir really blend together in a much more meaningful way. So, you know, once I knew that, I kind of visualized the character of Javier Mujica, and I had a sense of what he was like. And weaving in the art stuff, I knew, without spoiling anything, I knew I wanted the art world to play a big part in the book and also play a part in the climax. So when you reach the end of the book, it's an important element. And then I backtracked and did some research on Cuban history and Cuban artists, and the idea of this lost painting is kind of not a MacGuffin. It is a part of a plot, but this element that is unexpected but also ties into Cuban history felt really meaningful too.
And you really play with his relationship with his father, because he's really revered his father, though like many young males growing up, you clash with your father's a lot of disagreements. And Then he comes to understand and respect and revere his father, but then he begins to question the integrity of his father. I thought that was an interesting sort of twist from his normal reverence of his father as an adult.
Yeah, I think once the element of his mom and the truth about his mom, I knew that was going to play a part in the story. It had to challenge his relationship with his father, who over time, after his death, Pete has become, like you said, has begun to revere him and almost idolize him. And for me as a writer, it's interesting to question the beliefs of your characters and kind of tear down what their expectations are. So for a big part of this last book, Pete is, you know, doubting his father and doubting the relationship and basically doubting everything that came before. And that dynamic then changes again in a meaningful way, but it made for an interesting couple chapters or a book where instead of just looking up to this godlike figure, he realizes that his dad was a flawed person like him. And though he wasn't an alcoholic or he wasn't a PI, he was a person. And that to me felt like a meaningful leap forward.
Another part of the book, and I'm assuming this is a lot based on your study of the history of the Miami Police Department, that corruption was endemic in the Miami Police Department in your novel.
Yeah, a lot of that came from research, from a lot of time reading about, you know, the cocaine cowboys era and things like that. And a lot of it is fiction just for dramatic effect. But I tried to keep it as realistic as possible, you know, and I did a lot of research on police corruption and, you know, organized crime, and it's such a common byproduct of organized crime that it felt like as long as I stuck to the truer elements of stuff like that, it would ring more honestly.
So are you a big outliner when it comes to planning out your Pete Fernandez novels, and especially in light of this being the last one and wanting to wrap up some of the plot elements from the other books?
You know, when I started Silent City, I just wanted to finish a book. I just wanted to see if I could finish a novel. And I felt really, by the end of that first one, I knew that I needed to write another one because the characters were so interesting and there was a dynamic between Pete and Kathy that I had not expected. And that really came to life in a vibrant way. And then towards the middle of the third, Dangerous Ends, that's when I knew that I had two more in me. But it was always from the beginning, for me, it was about telling the story of the origin story of the private eye instead of starting in the middle where he's an established, you know, capable detective. I wanted to show how this normal guy goes from nothing to hopefully being a functional private eye. And that felt to me like it was ending with this last book. That's when it felt like it was coming to fruition. So it felt like a natural breaking point. And five's a nice number. You can call it a quintet. And so it has that jazz connection right there. But in terms of book by book, I usually have a general idea. I have a very key like element that I want to talk about, or I have things that I'm obsessing over that I want to write about, like jazz or organized crime or cults or serial killers. And then I just start writing, and usually a couple chapters in, I realize I need a more detailed outline. And that's when I panic and start planning further ahead. And even when I'm outlining, I try to keep it loose enough that if something happens or I'm inspired by something else, I can pivot without causing too much wreckage. And then, you know, revision is the best part of the process. That's when you can kind of go back and fine tune and tighten and make everything work.
You mentioned Kathy earlier, and the relationship between Pete and Kathy is
complicated.
Yeah, there it is. It's so complicated. Friends, lovers, friends, one night stand.
Right.
It's an incredibly complicated relationship he has with Kathy.
Yeah, you know, and I felt like it rang true though. You know, I feel like a lot of relationships in life are like that. There are moments where you feel like, this is how I am with this person, and this is the definition of our relationship, and that changes from one day to the next. But I think emotionally and you know, just their lives are intertwined. They're going to be together in some form no matter what, whether it's as partners, you know, investigative partners or romantic partners or just friends. I think there's always going to be a connection, and I wanted to emphasize that in the books. And I tried to avoid the romantic entanglement as much as I could, but they just, you know, the characters just gravitated toward each other, and it just made sense.
Wow. You really torture Pete.
Midnight.
You really torture Pete in this novel. You're really torturing Pete.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to be Pete. I feel bad for him. So even that, like with the fifth one, you're like, how much more can I really put this guy through? So it's almost as much to give him a little break as to just close things out, because he deserves, if not happiness, at least a few quiet years.
But don't you think that, and we did cover this a little bit earlier, I mean, the way you write Pete sort of reflects some of the issues people go through in their lives. Everyone doesn't have these two parents, house in the suburbs, happy childhood, graduate from college, get the job, find the love of your life, and get married.
Yeah, it's not that easy for most people, I think. I would say for the majority of people, I think there's this kind of entertainment version of the world and how things should be. But I really wanted to show someone that, you know, not everything landed perfectly for him, and he's still trying to kind of cobble a life together. And that's really relatable. At least I know it is to me, and it is to people I've spoken to. We're all trying to kind of make the best of the cards we're dealt. The theme of Pete is he's made mistakes, but he's ready to pick himself up and keep going.
And, of course, we talked earlier about him going through the he's part of Alcohol Anonymous. He was addicted to alcoholic. But also there are other characters, Javier Mujica. He's addicted to drugs. Pete's one of Pete's close friends is a getting off of drugs and was a drug dealer.
Right.
Substance abuse is sort of the recurring things that happen in this novel. How to talk about how you deal with the reality of substance abuse of people having within themselves or within family and friends.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is really an important part, not only of the character, but of the story. And I feel with any kind of addiction or problem, the challenge to the writer is to be as honest as you can and be truthful. And my pet peeve with Private Eye stories, some of them, is that you have the hard drinking PI who'll do like, he'll drink like 10 martinis, hop off the bar stool and save the day. And that's so, it just strikes me as, unless done really well, it doesn't really work. And so part of my challenge in terms of like the tropes of the genre was to flip the script on that a bit and try to show it as honestly as possible and show that, you know, these are real problems, and someone who is an alcoholic probably wouldn't be a very good private eye. But, you know, it allowed me to show how this person can work on themselves on one track and still get progressively better on the other track of being an investigator. And the challenge is to just be as truthful as possible and do the research and talk to other people in recovery and see, you know, what do they go through and how does that work for them and how do they survive and move on in the world. And so, you know, I tried to be as honest as I could, and hopefully it worked.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Alex Segura. We're talking about his fifth Pete Fernandez novel, a Cuban-American private investigator who lived in Miami, moved to New Jersey, moved back to Miami. And so one of the things that really caught my attention with this novel was the mob being pulled into it. And so we have an aging gangster with his consigliere. And then we have Los Enfermos, which was the gang coming from Cuba selling the drugs, and sort of looking at two different paths to illegal gang, gambling versus drugs, and the possible intersection of the two.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you read a lot about the Italian mob and the mafia, there's this unwritten rule that, you know, you shouldn't dabble in drugs. Drugs are kind of this unspoken thing that, you know, some gangsters do on the side, but it's never an official thing. And so I wanted to show what the overlap is. You have the drug cartels and the drug channels flowing upwards into the U.S. And, you know, there's a mob element to Blackout, which is the book before Miami Midnight. And without burdening people too much into reading what came before, there were a few threads that needed to get resolved from the first book, and a lot of that dealt with the Italian mob and just what was this guy looking for when he attacked Pete. And so I was kind of a little bit painted into a corner by my own design, so I needed to figure out a way to weave in the mob, the Cuban mafia, which is its own thing, its own like element, and Los Enfermos, which is this drug gang I created, to kind of serve as this pro-Castro cartel, basically, funneling money back to Cuba. And also with the knowledge that it was the last book. So how do we weave all this together, make it feel like it's a standalone story, but also honor what came before. So it was a lot of, honestly, it was a lot of pressure, but I think it worked out pretty well, I hope.
Oh, absolutely.
I leave it to the readers.
Absolutely. And I do, you know, if we're talking noir, for those of us who, when we think of noir, there's always a femme fatale.
Right.
And I'm going to let you describe her because I don't want to go too far. But she is a very, very interesting femme fatale that has some interesting character reveals as we go forward.
Yeah, it's a challenge because I don't want to reveal, I think readers of the series, if I say too much, will figure out who it is if they haven't read the last book. But there is a key character from the series that is not who you would expect. And it definitely challenges your perception of that character, but I feel as I was writing it, it worked out really well. And in terms of femme fatale, it kind of hits all the right buttons. They've got some history, there's some baggage, and it's loaded with surprises and danger. So that's to me the definition of the femme fatale.
And also the way you make her so mysterious as we're working through the book, this mysterious wife of the murdered jazz musician who swept him off his feet and then took control of his career. And part of the book is trying to find her.
Yeah, and it makes for an interesting challenge. And then the realization of what that history is, I think, really kind of blows the lid off the whole thing and makes it clear that we're not just dealing with one unique case. We're dealing with the last case for now for Pete.
So Pete gets shot up and beat up a lot, right?
Yeah. And he's definitely got his bumps and bruises and broken bones.
But he survives. And so talk about this. He comes close to death. But let me just say, he comes close to death.
Definitely.
And he goes to therapy.
The wake of Blackout, which ended on, I don't want to spoil the book, but there's a moment where you basically wonder if he makes it through. I think that has an effect on him, and it would have an effect on anyone. It's like PTSD of some kind. So for the first time, I think he shows some kind of foresight and decides, well, even if I'm retired, because at the beginning of the book he's retired and just running this bookstore, he decides, I need therapy, I need to start to learn how to defend myself. And in the opening chapters, his therapist tells him, well, it sounds like you're getting ready for something. Even though you say you're retired, it feels like you're bracing for something. And I think subconsciously he is, and there wouldn't be a novel if he wasn't, but I think that shows that he's evolving as a character, and he's not just the same evergreen person. He's trying to be someone else and trying to get better. So,
your publisher of your novels is also a writer. What are the advantages that you're finding when the actual publisher, the person that makes the final decision, actually is a writer himself?
Oh, it's great. I mean, Jason is so versatile and smart. Jason Pinter, who is the publisher of Polis Books, he knows how to look at things from a marketing perspective. He knows how to look at it from a writing perspective, and he was also an editor and an agent, and so he's worn many hats. I can relate to that working in publishing myself, but also being a creative person. So it helps in terms of him understanding the creative process. You know, when I say, I think this is the last book, but then he can also look at it from the marketing side and say, well, this is how we can promote it this way. So it's actually a huge help. I think it's great, and I wish more people had the benefit of that.
So now that the P. Fernandez series is over, he may be dead. He may be alive. We really don't know. Do you have plans for another series or another novel?
I'm working on a new standalone that I'm making some progress on. It's not a series. I mean, I guess it could be a series, but for now, I'm just planning it as one. It's set in New York. It has a Miami element, of course, as everything I do will have. And it's a female protagonist. So I'm really excited about how that's going. And I've got a comic book launching on Wednesday called The Black Ghost, which is a noir superhero story with a female protagonist. And some other stuff I haven't announced yet that are keeping me busy and, you know, never a dull moment.
Why did you decide to end the P. Fernandez series?
You know, I kind of teased this a little bit before, but I felt like we'd completed the arc. I felt like we'd reached the point where he was the PI. He, you know, we reached the end of that initial journey. I don't know if we won't ever come back. I think there are more stories to tell at some point. But I also don't want to feel like I need to crank them out just to meet some imaginary quota. I think if 4 or 5 years from now I have an idea and it feels like it can only be a Pete story, then I'll come back. But for now, I think it's a good time to let him rest for a little bit.
If you're getting any time to do any independent reading, any books that have really caught your attention?
What have I been reading? I love The Swallows by Lisa Lutz. I thought that was fantastic.
Lisa will be very happy to hear that. I love The Swallows,
no, she's
too.
Great. She's great. I really like Lady in the Lake, Laura Lippman's new novel, as did many other people. And Rob Hart's The Warehouse, which I thought was fantastic. Just a really dystopian look at the world that doesn't feel that far off from reality.
All right. The last thing I want you have to comment on how to manage your time when you have a wife, two children, and another career, and you're writing novels.
What I tell people is that, you know, I usually end up making my hobbies into my jobs. So instead of having a lot of active hobbies, I just have a lot of different jobs. And we don't really do much else. I do my work. I go to work. I write at home, put the kids to bed, write some more. And, you know, it's just if we're passionate about these things, and I love writing, I love reading, I love books. So to me, it's not really work. So if you find the things that you love and make them your work, then you're doing okay.
Alex Segura, author of Miami Midnight, the fifth novel in the Pete Fernandez series. What's your website?
My website is www.alex.alexsegura.com, and you can find me on Twitter at alex_Segura.
Thanks for being a guest on KAZI Book Review.
Thanks so much for having me. This is great.